This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is Mark Hertling. In 2013, Mark joined Florida Hospital in Orlando, Florida, as a senior vice president. He was recruited to lead a global health partnering strategy and to develop a stable and enduring physician leadership culture. That same year, Mark was appointed by President Obama to be one of 25 members of the President's Council on Fitness, Sport, and Nutrition. He also serves as a military analyst for CNN. Prior to his second career in healthcare leadership, Mark served almost four decades in the U.S. Army, finishing his career as commanding general of the U.S. Army Europe. In that position, he led over 50,000 soldiers, and over the course of his military career, he spent over 36 months leading soldiers in combat. Mark has a Bachelor of Science degree from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and holds master's degrees in exercise physiology, history, and international security studies. He's currently pursuing an executive doctorate in business administration. Mark is married to his best friend, Sue, and together they have two sons and four grandsons. Welcome, Mark. It's an honor to have you here today.
It's great to be here with you, Sam. Thanks for asking me.
Terrific. Listen, before we get started in this, I want everyone to know of your military awards and the honors that you've earned. Three Distinguished Service Medals, six awards of the Legion of Merit, five Bronze Stars, a Purple Heart, and it goes on. And from my heart, first of all, I want to thank you for your service to the country and what you have done for the country and individual citizens like me.
Yeah, thanks, Sam, for that. It's a pleasure to have served, and every day it was an experience that taught me more and more about people and life. But thank you for making that comment.
Good.
And if I could say, too, you know, my wife has an expression because she not only had me deploying back and forth to combat, but we had two sons and a daughter-in-law who were also soldiers. And she once told us that all those awards and decorations you just mentioned, she said, you know, you soldiers wear the decorations on your uniform. She said, us spouses wear the medals on our heart because they have to support the soldiers in all the things they do. And I thought that was pretty clever on her part.
Well, we thank her for her service as well.
Exactly right.
Okay. I want this podcast to be a kind of a division between your Army career, your military career, and Florida Hospital and what you expect to do and are doing there. So the people that are listening to this are very interested in, and from past podcasts, they're interested in military leadership. They're also interested in hospital leadership, and we'll try to blend those two for the transition that you're going through. So I guess talk to us about, first of all, your leadership in a combat situation. You talk about commanding a division in combat, and I guess a division is between 10 and 15,000 soldiers.
It's a little more than that. Usually it's about 18 to 20,000.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Tell us about that role and some of the difficulties involved. Mark is smiling at that question. I'm sure there are hundreds of things going through his mind and how he's going to reduce it to a few ideas here.
Well, the first thing I'd say is usually a division is 18 to 20,000 soldiers.
Okay.
I had a unique challenge in forming what was then called a plug-and-play division. And what that meant was when I was told that I was going to be a division commander and take the headquarters to Iraq as part of the surge, my boss also told me, you know, it's good news, congratulations on that, but the bad news is you're not taking any of your brigades or battalions with you. we're actually going to form this brigade on the fly, or this division on the fly, because it was part of the surge. So I started getting forces from all over the United States, and my headquarters, I was stationed in Germany, was going to Iraq from Germany, and all the units that were subordinate to our headquarters were coming from all over the United States. So that was the first leadership challenge, that I had actually about 30,000 soldiers from 27 different states, to include Alaska and Hawaii, working for me when we got to Iraq. And that was all formed not knowing the people, not having any experience with them, in many cases different cultures. I was a tank division commander, and I was getting units from airborne brigades and striker brigades, and that doesn't mean anything. But each one of those tribes and cults have their own personalities that you have to adjust to. Then in addition to that, and you've had Randy Mixon on, I was taking over from him in northern Iraq.
Okay.
And he, when I got there, our missions changed in that I had to lead the Iraqis that were connected to us, the Iraqi security forces, their divisions and their brigades in a different way than he did. They didn't fall directly under my command, but I had to influence them in many ways. So we had not only the 30,000 U.S. forces, but we also had an additional 10,000 allied forces from Poland, Ukraine, Latvia. Then we had about 60,000 Iraqi forces. So it was really a unique organization. We called it Task Force Iron. And my entire career, truthfully, I realized later on when I had a time to reflect on this, prepared me for that monumental challenge. And again, going back to what my wife said, you know, as I was pulling out my hair preparing for the deployment before I went, one night, you know, I just told her, I said, I'm not sure I'm up to this challenge. And she said, that's probably because, my wife is a very smart person, she said, that's probably because you're looking at the big picture. And she used a quote from the actor Will Smith. She said,
okay,
you don't have to build a perfect wall, you just have to lay one perfect brick at a time. And that really changed my approach toward what we were trying to do in northern Iraq.
When you think about that, it, as you list all of those things, it seems so monumental that mm-hmm. I can understand you saying, I'm not sure that I'm up to this. Or I can understand any person in that situation believing that. What is there about the leadership structure that enables it to happen? What is it, because it was successful, the surge was successful?
Yeah.
What is there about the mechanism that makes it work? I'm sure people are thinking, they're listening to this, well, I don't have that ominous a leadership situation, but what is there about my structure that might be made more perfect given what you have in your structure?
Yeah, well, I learned very early in my career that everything regarding leadership comes down to a dyad. It's one-on-one. No matter how big the organization is, it's all about interaction with one other person.
Mm-hmm.
That one other person can turn into a team or a large unit or a big organization, but really it's all about one-on-one leadership. And I learned that from a great sergeant early on in my career, that, hey, sir, don't address the platoon of 19 soldiers, address each one of them and their individual motivations. So that's number one. Number two, a lot of people think that the military is a very hierarchical organization and a lot of orders are issued. Both of those things are true. But leadership in the military is really tough because you have to use all different kinds of influence techniques to get young people to do things that really go against their will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you tell a young kid, hey, take that hill, and they know there's the possibility of being killed or being in danger or being scared to death, it's not an order that they want to obey. So you have to find other ways to motivate and inspire. And that's where the military's leadership training, which is very good and it's sequential and progressive, really kicks in. And we can go back to that with the hospital in a second. But from the very first day you enter the military, you start learning the very simplistic approach of three attributes that are required and three competencies that it builds toward. And those attributes are your character, your presence, and your intellect. It's who you are, how you are seen, and what you know. Those are your attributes. The competencies are how do you build trust, how do you develop teams, and how do you act? Now, that seems pretty simplistic, and it is. But boy, the many PhD theses that have been written behind those six words that we make it simple for soldiers to understand are pretty monumental.
I'm sure. Now, every leader also at times has to be an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And every leader that's listening is leading, but also needs to be an advisor to certain people.
Right.
Now, you've had a history of advising two different presidents of the United States.
Yeah.
Those presidents were?
Bush and Obama.
Bush and Obama. So tell us about your facility to advise, what that situation was about, and what we can learn from that process that will help other people advise the individuals that they're working with.
Well, that's where, and this is, we get to this when we actually train our physicians. It all goes back to those three words of character, presence, and intellect.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what you're talking about, number one. You have to be considered an expert or at least a semi-expert in your field, which requires a great deal of study and knowing what the details are. But you also have to have character, and that's monumental. And the biggest part of character, I mean, there's elements of character. You have to know the mission. You have to have a vision. You have to communicate well. You have to be empathetic. You have to be humble. But probably the most important part, and this is where the spiritual issues come in, is you have to have values.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know who you are and what you believe in. And if you don't have a real firm grasp on what your values are, whether you're a strong believer in integrity or personal courage or empathy or humor or being able to communicate. I mean, those are just a couple of 1,000 values you could name. If you don't have a strong grasp on who you are and what you want to portray based on your values, you're not going to be a very good leader, and you're not going to be able to influence many people.
And it comes back to that dyad you were talking
yep.
about and making that relationship intentional and powerful.
Right.
You've kind of helped me move the transition into Florida Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Tell everyone a bit about Florida Hospital.
Yeah.
And it's a monumental organization as well, a very respected organization. Tell us about it and what your role is. I introduced the role a bit. I know you're interested in transformational leadership. I want to get into
mm-hmm.
that, too.
Well, if I can first state how I came to Florida Hospital, it
Please.
Was really interesting. I met a couple of their executives in Europe when I was still wearing the uniform. And as part of that story, these executives heard me speak, and I guess they had just been told by a senior executive at the Disney Corporation what kind of an individual they should choose to lead this new global partnering initiative they were trying to establish. And I guess one of them saw in me the thing that the Disney executive said. And in fact, what the executive from Disney said was, hey, for this kind of a initiative, you want to hire a former military guy. And this surprised the COO at Florida Hospital. He goes, military guy? Why would we do that? And he says, well, because retired military guys, especially general officers, understand scope and scale of large problems, and they can bring it down to the simple elements.
Mm-hmm.
So this individual asked me to come visit Florida Hospital, and I think the first time he asked me to do that, I said, you know I'm not a doctor, right? And he said, yeah, I'm a tanker. I'm not really into healthcare. And he says, no, what we want you to do is something different. It goes back to my previous statement. When I first visited Florida Hospital, when I was thinking about joining them, one of the very first things I saw was the individual leadership that was present, their mission statement, extending the healing ministry of Christ, which is powerful, their vision for the future in terms of how they wanted to do healthcare. But most importantly, it was a values-based organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people claim they are. A lot of organizations claim they're values-based, but you could see that for the most part, they were living their values. So that sold me on joining the organization. What I think also was important is this individual who brought me on board, Brian Paradis, said, we want you to help change our culture. toward a leadership culture and to be more professional in the way we approach things. So that was the task he gave me in a variety of different areas. And it's fascinating to go from one type of culture, the military, one profession, the profession of arms, to the profession of healthcare. They are, by the way, the only two professions, and there, I would say there's four major professions in the United States right now, the ministry, the legal profession, the medicine, and the military. Now, there are others like engineers and journalists and professors, but those are the four big ones. And if you're part of a profession, you have to understand that you have to have values and ethos, and you have to work as a professional when you're in those professions. And the only two of those professions that deal in life and death are the military and healthcare.
Well, I'm a former patient at Florida Hospital, and yeah. I can tell you they live their values.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, they live their values.
And they all hope so, too.
Absolutely. Well, we have a feature on each podcast called Sunday to Monday, and it may be a scripture verse, or it's maybe something you might hear in church on a Sunday that you might take forward or learn from. And one popped into my mind as I thought about your military career in the tasks that you have at Florida Hospital. And it has to do with sort of being a role model. And there's a verse out of the book of Mark, first chapter, it's around verse 21. And it talks about Jesus going to Capernaum. And as he was traveling, he was giving his message and healing people. And that as he came in contact with people, they took that experience and sent it to other people. Mm-hmm. And it went on and on and on in terms of that message being delivered. Now, what I'm wondering is that sort of a model for a military leader or a hospital administration leader in terms of visiting the troops, so to speak, and creating news that then moves out into the organization and helps build culture?
I think it does. And you know, I think a lot of Americans have sort of a misrepresentation of the military. When people really connect with soldiers, what they realize is they are, in fact, not only the defenders of our Constitution, a series of ideas, but they are also extremely well-prepared, and they message by their actions more than anything else. And sometimes those actions are forceful, you know, standing guard at a post or showing themselves to be strong. Sometimes, you know, one of my favorite pictures, which I have in my office at home, is a young soldier who's bending over talking to a child and in Iraq. And he is obviously consoling this child who is crying for whatever reason. And there's that picture of this big husky guy with a rifle and all the kit on, reaching over to touch a child and trying to help them, not just from a physical perspective, but from an intellectual, emotional, and spiritual perspective as well. And I think that's what Florida Hospital has, and it's one of the things that brought me to it, is they do more than heal the body. Mm-hmm. You know, their goal is to contribute to the mind and the spirit and the soul as well. And that's what real leaders do.
And that picture that you describe of the soldier and the child, listeners may not be able to be a soldier in a child situation, but people are always watching leader-follower situations and taking mental pictures of that. And the news can still be made that way. So it is
well, that gets back to those three attributes again. That is the presence piece.
Right.
When you gain strength from someone else just being there, which in the Mark verse that you just mentioned, that's what people did. They were not only healed, but they wanted to tell everyone else how much this individual, Christ, had contributed to their life. So there's more to it than just the healing.
Tell us a bit about what you would consider to be a pearl of wisdom here. What would you like to leave people? Each of our podcasts ends with a pearl of wisdom. What would you like to leave people with in terms of a statement that they can internalize, they can use to help build their mm-hmm. body of insight about leadership in a practical way. What would that be for you?
Yeah. One of the things we teach our doctors that in what we call the leadership influence model, most people are given a task as a leader. If you're a leader, you're saying, okay, I want you to get this done. They immediately begin planning how they're going to do it with their team. And what we try and persuade people to understand more than jumping immediately to preparing how to do things, you have to understand the motivations of the people who are on your team. So the understanding of other people, getting back to the dyad, mm-hmm. knowing what turns you on, what really causes you to be motivated, I've got to consider before I try and lead you. That's why you have to get to know your people. I had an experience in Iraq, which was probably the most, one of the more moving experiences I had. My counterpart, an Iraqi general by the name of General Riyad, asked me to participate in the Ramadan celebration with him. So I fasted with him on some of the days, not all the days. I prayed with him several times. And I knew this guy, this three-star Iraqi general, as an Iraqi leader, but I never saw him as a person before we started having this spiritual relationship between two different religions. And we would often drink tea, and he would talk about Islam, and I would talk about Christianity. And we found that we had many more things in common than we had differences. And that was a fascinating experience for me. And it just gets to back to the issue is, if you want to lead, you have to develop trust. And in order to develop trust, you have to understand others, and they have to understand you.
Awesome. And intentional conversations and leadership being much different than barking out orders.
Right.
It's
exactly.
How do you develop that relationship. Well, Mark, I told you this 20 minutes was going to go by in a hurry, and it's pretty much up. Thank you so much for being here today. Listeners can find Mark with the email address mark.hertling. It's mark.hertling at flhosp.org. That's floridahospital.org. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom. Or my website, chasewisdom.com. See you next Wednesday. In the meantime, you know the drill. Keep on chasing. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.